Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. This week, we talk to perhaps the fastest rising star in the entire Democratic Party. We're talking about Mayor Pete Buttigieg. A couple months ago, we talked to him. He was at like 0% of the polls. Very few people seem to care. Ever since, he has just skyrocketed. Done a ton of national media. Seems like he's everywhere these days. And it has really helped him. Of course, he's kind of unlike any other candidate. He would be a historic candidate. And so here is our conversation this week with Mayor Pete.
We've talked to every candidate. We start with the same question. Why you? There's so many candidates.
Yeah, well, I think it's safe to say I'm not like the others. We're at a moment of profound tectonic change in the life of our country. And it takes candidates who step up with a plan for what to do right away and a longer view. And as somebody who is really focused on what America's going to look like in, 2054, when I get to the current age of the president, I'm also determined to make sure that we really rise to meet the challenge of a country that's really caught in between eras. My own experience is that of helping change the trajectory of a community in the industrial Midwest as a mayor. It's also a military experience and an experience of somebody whose life has been very personally shaped by the decisions of those in power. And I want to bring that attitude into the presidential contest and create the space for ideas, not just about democratic policies that all the candidates are talking about, but basic democratic structural reforms that not enough people are talking about.
Well, speaking of ideas, though, you have like Jay Inslee we talked to. He's all about climate change. When we talked to President Trump last time around, it was build a wall. Yeah. What is the one policy issue for Mayor Pete? What's the big idea for Mayor Pete?
The biggest thing is democracy. We've got to pay attention to the condition of our democracy because it's slipping away. And that goes to everything from making it easier to vote and to register to vote to profound structural reforms like doing away with the Electoral College. That means that voters in California or in Indiana have a hard time seeing our voices matter in the national process. Some of these things can be done on day one, like signing a version of H.R. 1, the anti-corruption pro-democracy bill that the House recently passed. Some of it will take years in order to deliver, but we have to start right away and there's no more time to lose.
Of course, the Electoral College would need a constitutional amendment, which is a bigger lift.
Yeah, well, this is a country that passed a constitutional amendment to eliminate drinking. And then realized that was a dumb idea and changed it back. So when it comes to something as important as securing our democracy, I believe a country that that does this from time to time should absolutely be willing to entertain constitutional remedies on everything from the way we choose our president to getting money out of politics, because the Citizens United decision was a disaster for our democracy. And if it can't be overturned without an amendment, it's time to pursue an amendment.
We're standing here at the Abbey, which is an iconic gay bar in the middle of West Hollywood. Do you feel extra pressure? Do you feel the burden of this community on your back, the way that they look at you?
Well, I'm certainly conscious of the responsibility that comes with the historic nature of this candidacy. At the same time, I'm responsible for being there for everybody. And so not only is it very meaningful to hear from members of the LGBT community what it means to them to have somebody like me running, but I've got to make sure that for anyone who has ever borrowed a dollar or needed to see a doctor or wondered if their vote is counting in this country, that I'm there for them, and we're very mindful of that, too.
You know, the number one competitor right now in California is Joe Biden. He's the number one competitor around the country. Joe Biden has spent years in the Situation Room. He's met with all the world leaders. He spent decades in the Senate negotiating deals. You haven't done any of that. Why are you more qualified than him?
Well, I think this is a moment that really calls for generational change. And it's not about who's been in Washington for the longest time. It's about who has the best vision and the best readiness to carry things forward. I would stack my experience as a mayor up against Washington experience in terms of helping me understand how these issues actually cash out on the ground. And when it comes to foreign policy, frankly, I learned as much about foreign policy when I was in uniform with a weapon on my hip in Afghanistan as I did when I studied it as a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford. Each of us has a different life experience, but I think mine is one that is highly relevant to the moment that we're in and the challenges that America faces right now.
You seem like such a nice guy. Some people might wonder, are you tough enough to take on President Trump when he lobs insults, when he says homophobic things? When what do you do in that scenario?
I'm not worried about Donald Trump. I grew up in Indiana and I'm gay. I'm comfortable dealing with bullies. And from the first time to the last time that I heard the alarm go off for indirect rocket fire at the base I was staying at, I learned about how to keep your cool when there's a lot coming your way. This is an election that's going to require enormous discipline. not to take the bait that this president puts out there in order to get us talking about him. But the more we're talking about him, the less we're talking about you. And while we certainly need to correct the lies and confront the wrongdoing, at the end of the day, the biggest thing we need to do is make sure every voter in every part of this country understands what our agenda means for them. We're the ones trying to get you a raise. We're the ones trying to raise your living standards. We're the ones defending your health care. We're the ones ready to enact paid family leave. We're the ones with the best message for voters. And the more we can keep focus on their lives and not on the kind of horror show playing out on cable TV, the more likely we are to actually win.
Speaking of that message, we were with you the first time you were in West Hollywood, but we were like the only crew there, and you were at like 0% in the polls. Now you're this phenom. What do you make of this journey, and what's sort of been the most surprising part of this journey?
Well, honestly, this trajectory is a lot faster than we had expected. We hoped to do well, and we believed our message would resonate, but I couldn't have guessed that my job in the month of May would be to consolidate a top three position. I would have thought we'd still be getting our name out there and kind of earning a place in the presidential contest. So the big lesson we've drawn from it is that this message matters to people. It's resonating. It's also lasting because it's been, at least a couple of months since I arrived on the national scene. So in a very literal sense, I could say we're past the flavor of the month period. At the same time, this is a marathon, and just because things are looking good for us now doesn't mean that we can get comfortable. We got a lot of work to do to get better known and to make sure we really have the right kind of ground level organization to match the kind of top level financial and media attention we're getting.
And just to wrap things up, a fun night out with you, or like what? Tell us something about you that we don't know in terms of who you are as a person, or what's it like? What do you like to do to hang out?
We're pretty laid back. I mean, for Chasen and me, our idea of a fun night is to maybe open up a beer, a bottle of wine, catch up on Game of Thrones, and just take it easy, which doesn't happen too much these days.
Yeah.
But, you still try to stay human, and whenever I get a chance to play music or read a book or spend a little time with friends, it keeps me well.
Thank you very much. So who wins Game of Thrones?
Ooh, it's a good question. I was always rooting for Daenerys, but I don't know, her leadership style is getting a little wobbly in my view. So I think it's really anybody's guess.
2020, one of the topics for this week's panel. With us this week, Brian Goldsmith. He's a political consultant, a former journalist, and currently a volunteer in Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign. This week, Brian and his wife, Claire, hosted a fundraiser for Mayor Pete at his home. Susan Shelley is a columnist and member of the editorial board of the company that runs 11 newspapers in Southern California, including the Orange County Register. One recent column addresses what would happen if the popular app Tumblr was taken over by Pornhub. Another is about what she calls the bullet train fiasco.
Yes.
And Christopher Titus is one of the most prolific and successful comedians of his generation. He earned an Emmy nomination for his dark comedy Titus, which aired right here on Fox. He'll be performing at Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank on May 21st and 25th. And his recent comedy tour, Amerageddon, currently streaming on Amazon Prime. Welcome to you all, and welcome, Susan, Christopher, the first time
thanks,
the issue
yeah,
is. Good to have you.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about Mayor Pete, who we just had on the show. Brian, you had him at your house. You were friends with him in college. You've known him for years. What's he like? What's the real deal? What's your take on where things are at right now?
Well, I should be clear, I'm speaking for myself and not the campaign. Pete is an extraordinary person. I mean, I think a lot of us in college thought he'd run for president at some point. We just didn't think it would be quite so soon. But I think that this moment calls for generational change. California, above all things, represents change and the future, and so I think he's a wonderful fit for this state.
Is he a real threat to President Trump, Susan?
I think we're looking at a situation where in 6 months, every voter will have their own personal Democratic candidate. And that way, everyone can have the identity that they want and the issues they want. And they're like ducks in a shooting gallery so far. Nobody's going to beat President Trump with full employment and no war. Peace and prosperity elects people. There's no way.
Well, I mean, I look at it this way. I always look at the qualifications. The guy's got Oxford and Harvard. He actually speaks, speaks six different languages, not all of them fluently, but most of them fluently. And our current president speaks half a language badly. So my attitude about the whole thing is that he seems to be very qualified. He didn't dodge the draft. He actually went to the military service. I think if you look down the facts, if you check off the boxes, Buttigieg is all over Trump, stomps on him.
Well, the entire population of South Bend, Indiana would fit in the Rose Bowl. So I don't know that that's a credible record.
Hey, Chris, do you think he's tough enough to take on President Trump?
Yeah, he went to Afghanistan. Yeah, he's tough enough. I went over there when we did some shows for those guys. Yeah, he's tough enough. I mean, you talk about the economy. Actually, unemployment under Obama went from 10% to 4.9%. Under Trump, it's gone actually 1 point. It's gone from 4.9 to 3.6.
Well, if you started the economic crash in 2008 or 2009, of course it came up from there.
Yeah, and which the last Republican crashed it. Right, got it.
I'm not going to defend that either.
Good. You're a smart lady. You're really a smart lady.
But I don't think people give President Trump enough credit for the good things that he has done. A lot of people don't like his style. A lot of people don't like his Twitter account. But whatever his methods, he has accomplished a lot. And if Hillary Clinton had been elected and she had this record, people would be dancing in the streets.
Let's talk about some of the other people that are trying to take this job. One of them, Joe Biden, the Vice President of the United States, making his first campaign appearance in California. He went to King Taco. He also did a lot of big-time fundraisers. What do you make of Joe Biden? Because all the polls since he's entered shows him going up.
Yeah, he's an enormously impressive guy with a really long track record in Washington. He was first elected to the Senate in 1972. And I think the question for the voters is going to be, do you want to kind of try to go back to the Obama administration or back to the 1970s or 80s, or do you want to move forward with something completely new and different? And I think it's going to be a challenge for him to represent change.
You know, Susan, President Trump has talked a lot about Biden, tweeted a lot about Biden. Do you think Biden is the one he's most scared of running against?
No, I don't think he's scared of running against anybody who's in the race today. If any of them were really strong enough, there wouldn't be so many of them. They would be better off with one or two strong candidates than with this enormous and constantly growing field, which just indicates how many people still feel underserved by the candidates who are in the race.
Well, I think because there were 16 or 17 Republican candidates 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think that that was a really weak field and the voters were underserved?
You know, that's an interesting question because a lot of people were so disgusted with government, they were so disgusted with what had been happening in the country that they didn't want anybody who had been in government.
And here in California, Senator Kamala Harris is making a push. She's got endorsements for pretty much every single elected officer in California, almost everyone. And yet she's not ahead in the polls here. Why do you think that is?
It's a long race. I think at one point everybody's record's going to start coming true. I like that Elizabeth Warren's coming up with plan after plan. Kamala Harris is a very, very strong person. She scares me a little bit. You know, it's like hanging out. And when you talk about, you know, Trump's not afraid of anything. Any guy that can bankrupt four casinos and just keep moving forward is awesome. He's not afraid of anything. That's it. And that was in Atlantic City, too. He's not scared of anything. I get it. You're right. He's not afraid of anything.
Having lost more money than any other American taxpayer, and year after year after year, that's quite an accomplishment.
Jimmy Kimmel said something great. He's not the best businessman. He's actually, on paper, the worst businessman we've ever had. The man couldn't sell water, vodka, or steaks. That's food, water, and alcohol. How do you mess that up?
No matter how much money he lost, he's still the most profitable part of the United States government.
Okay.
For himself, maybe.
And to that point that you mentioned, Elizabeth Warren on the cover of Time magazine talking about the fact that she is laying out so many different policy positions as well. So we want to give you a quick update to last week's show. There's a phenomenon that all the political scientists are talking about. It's called the issue is bump. I'm sure you've heard people talk about this. Candidates get a boost from appearing on the show. So case in point, Marianne Williamson, the presidential candidate, was here last week hoping to get enough donors to qualify for the debate. Well, this week, she crossed that threshold. Congrats to her. We hope more candidates will come here and experience that bump for themselves.
The Alex bump. We got the Alex bump.
There it is.
That's awesome.
California Governor Gavin Newsom revising his budget plan. He's expecting a $21.5 billion surplus in California, but he's not planning any more tax cuts. Could see more tax increases. Newsom wants to spend $1 billion on homelessness. So let's talk about that with our panel, comedian Christopher Titus, political consultant Brian Goldsmith, and Susan Shelley, who is the vice president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association. So I'm sure this is an issue you're passionate about. What do you make of the budget?
You know, they say there's a surplus. So if there's a surplus, why do they need tax increases? There isn't really a surplus. What we have is a huge unfunded liability for pensions and retiree health benefits and other debt that California has racked up. And so all those debts through the years, welcome to the future. We're here, and now we have to pay it. So there isn't enough money for basic services. They're trying to buy votes with new programs because that's what they do. And they're raising taxes. And it's got to stop because California has the highest taxes of any state.
So what about this? If we have a $21 billion surplus, how about we just take care of the people that need it? Because, by the way, we're not buying votes from the guy that's living in the cardboard box, are we?
Well, Susan is right that we do have a lot of
I mean, that guy's not going to put him over the top, I don't think.
Doesn't have a Nielsen box either,
exactly,
by the way.
Right?
Not and watching the news.
He doesn't have Fox or CNN. How's he voting? How's he making an informed decision?
Susan is right that we have structural debt and pension issues that we have to address in California. I'm disappointed the governor hasn't gone after that more aggressively. What California really needs, in my view, is fundamental tax reform so that when the country catches a cold, California doesn't get typhoid fever, which is sort of where we are right now with our budget.
Ain't no sunshine when
Welcome back. We are listening to my mom's favorite song, Ain't No Sunshine by Bill Withers on this Mother's Day weekend. A huge shout out to my mom, Crystal Michelson. She's my North Star, always guiding me in everything I do. She's basically a de facto producer of this show. She likes to criticize when it's not good. She bakes cookies and brownies for every guest every week.
I'm there for nothing.
I love you, Mom.
Yeah.
All right, now Mother's Day shout-outs. Brian, start with you.
I don't have copying the prompter for my mom.
Wait, you said that.
I love her very much. I'm enormously proud of her. She's made a huge difference in the lives of foster kids and her own kids. And the annoying thing about my mother is that she has very strong advice, but she's usually right.
Oh, well, I lost my mom a few years back. This is a picture of her when she was in school. Oh. And she you can see this is someone who sees the possibilities of what can be joyful in life and goes after it. And that's why I love this picture of her. She introduced me to books that changed the way I thought about things, and it opened vistas that I never would have seen myself, and I'll always be grateful.
Christopher.
I'd like to say have shout out to two moms in my life. To Sharon, my wife's mother, thank you for being my mom. You know, my mom was a manic depressive schizophrenic, so I had a bunch of moms with different names. but Sharon was awesome. That scared you. And then to Grandma Jean, who comes over and she's kind of our mom and takes care of us. Those two women in my life, brought to me by my lovely wife. Without them, I probably wouldn't have the access to not being a jerk. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you, and here to not being a jerk. Let's end on that.
There you go.
So happy Mother's Day to everybody at home.
Thanks so much for listening to the Issue Is podcast. We hope that you subscribe. Let us know what you think of the show. And please tell your friends about us as well. We're trying to get the word out there that the show even exists. We air on TV in Los Angeles, Friday nights at 10:30 p.m., repeats at 1:30 a.m., set your DVRs. On Saturdays at KTVU, in the San Francisco Bay Area, we're at 6:30 a.m. And you can check me out anytime on YouTube, youtube.com/Alex Michelson. Thanks again for listening. Have a great week.